Proposals for leasehold reform were a major talking point during 2018 and throughout early 2019, with a number of consultations being carried out in this area as part of the Law Commission's overall residential leasehold and common hold project. It is split into three separate sub-projects: leasehold enfranchisement, common hold, and the right to manage. With so much on the agenda, it can get tricky to follow what's going on, so we asked two law commissioners into our studio to summarise the three strands of the project and update us on how it is all going. Professor Nick Hopkins and Stephen Lewis. Joining us first is Professor Hopkins. Welcome, Nick, to our studio.
Thank you.
So first, looking at the project globally, how would you summarise the brief from the government that led to your work?
Yeah. Our brief really goes back to the summer of 2016, when we consulted on our 13th programme of law reform, and we asked in that context whether leasehold law was in need of reform. And that question prompted one of the biggest postbags that we've had to a consultation response, as you might imagine. And so we took that evidence to government, and government agreed that there is a need for reform. But we also agreed, in view of the number of issues that had been referred to us, that there was a need to prioritise as well. And so we agreed that we would look at enfranchisement to make it faster, cheaper and easier for people to extend their lease or buy their freehold. And that we would look at common hold as an alternative form of ownership to leases. And then a bit later on, we agreed to add the right to manage to our brief as well. And so we've been taking forward those three projects. Now, each of those projects has a set of terms of reference, but we also have a couple of umbrella terms of reference for all of the work, which really represents the brief that government has given us to do. And they are to provide a better deal for leaseholders as consumers and to increase fairness and transparency within the market.
You talk about wanting to increase fairness. So how would you describe the problems? How would you sum up the problems that were the impetus for the concern and in this area and the need to take a fresh look at how residential leasehold works?
Yeah, it's fair to say it's not the first time we've heard about problems in the residential leasehold sector. And I think the problems are long-standing. And a lot of them come down to two inherent features of leasehold. So first of all, the fact that a lease is a wasting asset. So as soon as you buy your lease, that clock is ticking down. At some point, the lease either comes to an end or you have to extend it or buy the freehold. And we've had leaseholders say to us they feel like they're having to pay twice for their home. And the second problem is that some leaseholders feel a lack of autonomy and control within a lease, particularly if they have a relationship with an external landlord. They don't feel that they get the benefits of being a homeowner that they expect to buy. So those problems are long-standing. But what's happened recently are a number of things that have made the calls for reform louder and more urgent. So, for example, we've seen instances of bad practice within the sector, such as the ground rents that double every 10 years. And we've also seen a lot more leasehold houses being sold. Now, what I'd emphasise is that we haven't been asked simply to provide solutions to those particular difficulties. Mm-hmm. Those difficulties have really shone a light on the underlying concerns that people have with leasehold.
And obviously this is a majorly important area, one that is complicated due to the sort of sprawling sort of web of legislation that covers it. And it also affects a huge number of people in the UK. So did that play a part in your thinking, the Commission's thinking, in deciding to split this project into three separate consultations rather than try and attack everything at once?
Gosh, could you imagine the size of a single consultation paper covering these topics? They are, of course, all interlinked, but each project also has particular aims and particular intentions. Enfranchisement and right to manage are about making a law work better for leaseholders. And even if common hold becomes the go-to tenure for residential leasehold, I don't think we're going to see leases turning into common hold overnight. So we have to make the law work better for leases. So I think because of those different aims, there is a need to look separately at each area. I tend to see them as operating on a spectrum. So we have right to manage, which is about helping leaseholders to manage their block without owning the asset. That asset stays with the landlord. We have enfranchisement, which, as well as helping individuals to extend their own lease or buy their freehold, is also enabling leaseholders collectively to buy the freehold so that they own the asset and manage it. And then we have common hold, in which there is no separate asset because everyone is a freeholder. So that there is that link between them, but they're all doing slightly different things. What we've ensured at the commission is that the teams working on each project are working very closely together so that we are consistent in the policies that we put forward.
Now, before we look in detail at a couple of those separate consultations with you, I just wanted to ask your thoughts on the legislation. At least hold law is very complicated, as we said. And do you think there is a compelling case for a consolidation of the legislation in this area?
Yeah, it really is complicated, isn't it? when you sit back and look at the landscape, you've got hundreds of pages of legislation, you've got centuries of case law, you've got dozens of statutes. I think it's fair to say if you were starting with a blank piece of paper, you wouldn't come up with what we have now.
Many of them obviously drafted in very different social situations to the one the world that we live in now.
Absolutely, and that's really one of the key difficulties, that we've had that piecemeal reform over a very long period of time. It is crying out for rationalisation, simplification and consolidation. Now, we think that has to be done in stages. It's such a vast area, and you have to get the policy right in each stage first. So what we hope is that the work we're doing at the moment is the first stage of a process that will lead to comprehensive reform in other areas. And I think that's really important, because we always have to bear in mind we're talking about how people own their homes, and that's a fundamental thing. It's never going to be simple, because property isn't. But I think people have the right to expect the law to be as simple and certainly as accessible as possible.
So we're going to take a look at each of these consultations in turn chronologically. First, your paper on leasehold enfranchisement reform was published in September 2018. So can you outline for us what the proposals were in that paper?
Yeah. We have taken a comprehensive look at enfranchisement law, and it's a root and branch review. And we've organised that over four key issues. So we've looked at what the enfranchisement rights are, who has them, how they're exercised, and the price you have to pay. So in terms of what the rights are, we've provisionally proposed that all leaseholders who qualify should have a right to extend their lease multiple times, paying a premium, and then going to a peppercorn ground rent. We've said that extension should be for at least 90 years. We've asked if it should be longer, potentially considerably longer. And that's in addition to rights that people may have to buy the freehold as well. We've also suggested that enfranchisement or collective enfranchisement should be able to take place over multi-blocks or over an estate, so extending that right of collective enfranchisement. And we've provisionally suggested introducing a new right, which we're calling the right to participate, and that's a right to join in a collective enfranchisement that's already taken place. So that's the what the rights are. In terms of who has them, again, we've suggested really streamlining these rights and removing some of the criteria that have created difficulty, so no financial criteria, and removing that two-year ownership requirement. In terms of how they're exercised, again, we've suggested streamlining, a simple process, a single process for all rights, using prescribed forms, with disputes settled by the tribunal. And we've looked at what could be done to help freeholders when the landlord is missing. We've also asked a number of questions about who should pay the landlord's reasonable cost in the process. And then finally, on the how much, we set out a number of options to reduce the price payable. We look at whether a simple formula such as 10 times ground rent might be used. And we've also looked at how the current methodology might be reformed in order to bring that price down.
I imagine how much is one of the more controversial aspects of all this. And I'm sure you'll have read some of our commentary that we've had featured in EG. So is it one of the trickier problems that the Commission has faced in trying to find a more fair solution for leaseholders looking to enfranchise without majorly reducing the levels of premium that landlords can expect to achieve?
It is certainly tricky. We've been given a particular task with price. For everything else, we've been making recommendations for reform. On price, we've been asked to provide the government with options to reduce the price payable while providing the landlord with sufficient compensation. That reflects the fact that the price paid isn't simply a question for lawyers or indeed a question for valuers. There is a political judgment that needs to be made. We have seen criticism of that task we've been set. We've seen that we've been set an impossible task, that we've been asked to square a circle that can't be squared. But I think, in fact, that the term of reference we have reflects the legal position. We know through case law that landlords have legitimate interests in the enfranchisement process. And if sufficient compensation isn't paid, then the law would be contrary to Article 1, Protocol 1 of the European Convention on Human Rights. So we have to take that into account. If we didn't, then options that we put forward would simply fail. They couldn't be enacted. So it is difficult. We have we have leaseholders who feel very angry that we're talking about landlords' human rights and not their human rights. But we have to act within the limits that the law allows.
So I believe the consultation period on enfranchisement closed on the 7th of January. What can you tell us about the level of response the Commission received?
We've had what I think is an unprecedented level of response for what is a complex technical area of law. We've had 1,100 consultation responses. That includes very substantial responses running into 100 pages or more themselves. We've heard from lots of leaseholders in that consultation. We also asked the leaseholders to complete a survey, and we've had around 1,500 complete that survey. So when you put that together, we have around 30,000 pages of consultation responses to look at.
That's a lot to work through. So what are the next steps? Do we have any idea on a timetable?
Yeah, but we have a huge task, it's fair to say. And we take consultation really seriously. We make recommendations for reform based on the responses we receive to consultation. So we will be looking at all of those 30,000 pages very closely. We will then be presenting recommendations to reform to our commissioners. And once we have agreed those with commissioners, we will publish our final report. We hope that we will have that done by the end of the year. The key question then is when legislation is available, assuming government accepts our recommendations. And that's a matter that the ministry needs to pursue.
Hopefully by then we will have an answer on Brexit, so that should hopefully speed up the legislative
will we do? we certainly hope so. And in fact, at the start of this process, we're thinking to some extent the fact that there's a bit of a gap now where Parliament is so dominated by Brexit is the opportunity to actually do a proper review, to do a comprehensive review, because it's not going to delay implementation because that's not going to happen practically while Brexit is being resolved.
Yeah, that makes sense. So second, let's turn to look at your consultation paper on common hold reform, which was published in December last year. And the consultation period for that has literally just closed, if I'm right.
Just closed on the 10th of March,
So could you again sort of outline for us what the broad proposals were in that paper?
Yes. We've been asked essentially to look at the legal barriers to common hold being used successfully. So we've looked across the legislation to try and work out why legally that the tenure hasn't taken off. Mm. And we've been really helped in that process by responses to a call for evidence that we had at the start of the project about a year ago, and by an expert panel that we've set up to help us understand the law. And so if I highlight some of the key things that we look at in the consultation paper. One is that common hold at the moment, the legislation we have, doesn't really work well for multi-block or mixed-use developments. It's quite interesting looking at the law now and when it was introduced, mm-hmm. that a lot of developments seem to be fairly simple, single-use residential developments. Nowadays, we have much more complex developments, often with residential and commercial elements combined. And the common hold legislation doesn't really work for those. So we've provisionally proposed that it should be possible to have sections within a single common hold. Now, in effect, what sections do are enable, say, a residential block and a commercial unit to be self-managed, while the development is managed as a whole. Mm-hmm. So it gives the flexibility that isn't there in the current legislation. We've also looked at what could be done to help ensure that common holds remain solvent, because insolvency of an association is a concern, particularly for lenders who want to ensure that their security is preserved. We've looked at what could be done to help dispute resolution within common hold, in particular at the role the tribunal can play in that, and at what can be done to help ensure that minority interests are protected. So balancing flexibility, which is one of the real benefits of common hold, with the ability for people to have certainty as to the rules that govern where they live. We've also been looking at conversion. How do you convert an existing leasehold block mm-hmm. to common hold? Because we are asked specifically to look at how to make common hold a viable alternative to leasehold for both existing as well as new homes. So for existing homes, that means changing from leasehold to common hold. And we've put forward a couple of options of how that conversion could take place on the basis of a majority of leaseholders wanting to take part rather than unanimity, which is needed at the moment.
So I know from experience that common hold seems to be a topic that people have strong views on. It seems something that's almost guaranteed to get people talking. It's the kind of property ownership that seems to have taken root in other countries around the world, but not so much here. So why do you think there is such a large body of resistance to it as a concept here in the UK?
I don't think, from the conversations we've had, I don't think that there is an objection to common hold as a concept. We've spoken to a lot of stakeholders who say that they see what common hold does, they don't think it's for them. Equally, we've heard from a lot of leaseholders who say that common hold should be the only option for flat ownership, leaseholders who want to see leasehold banned in the future. It's used around the world. We know that. We know that we have strata and condominium schemes, which are the equivalent of common hold. And it's England and Wales, which is the exception, because we've adopted long leases as the way to own flats. Long leases have really become ingrained into our idea of flat ownership, and they're familiar to lenders, they're familiar to developers, they're familiar to lawyers. So I think what we're seeing is that people understand the concept, but there is that, you know, perhaps inherent conservatism towards something that is so significantly different. Mm. But a lot of leaseholders are saying that they do want common hold. They do want something that is different to the lease. Now, of course, for some stakeholders, if you're a developer, for example, leasehold does have some incentives because you can set your ground rent, you can have income streams with it. So at the moment, even though we think there is a consumer demand, there isn't necessarily anything to incentivize developers and others from choosing common hold over leasehold.
Do you think it would benefit from maybe a bit of a rebrand, a different name to suit a new form of common hold?
Yeah,
make it more palatable.
It's a good one, isn't it? And I suppose we have to bear in mind we have a model that's there, and there are common holders in existence, and we've spoken to them. And in fact, there's a common hold that's been developed very recently by a builder who has experienced leasehold, who doesn't like leasehold himself because of the pitfalls, and who has made that decision to build common hold instead. So I think if we were to develop something entirely new, then we'd have to question what that would do to those who have already bought into common hold. So we're happy to take the legislation that's there and to really develop it so that it's fit for use.
So has that considerable interest in common hold that we discussed translated into a high level of response?
It certainly has. I've just heard this morning that we have around 500 consultation responses, and we've had considerable interest throughout the consultation period as we've gone around talking to professionals and talking to leaseholders about our consultation paper.
And again, sort of looking forward now, where do you go with that next strand of the project?
So now we have the same task as we have with enfranchisement. We have to collate all of those responses. We have to start analysing them and then using those responses to formulate our recommendations for reform, which we will present to commissioners for agreement and then publish our final report.
Well, it sounds like you have plenty of reading that will probably keep you busy for most of the rest of the year.
So. Absolutely.
thank you very much for joining us and explaining those two strands of the project.
Thank you very much.
Now we turn to Law Commissioner for Commercial and Common Law, Stephen Lewis. Welcome, Stephen, to our studio.
Good morning, Jess.
You're here to talk about the third strand of this project, the Commission's consultation paper on reform of the right to manage, published in January 2019. Consultation period remains open until the 30th of April. So for anyone yet to respond, what are the key proposals in this paper?
On pre-consultation with stakeholders, we heard many recurring complaints about inadequacies in the current system. And broadly, they were as follows. First of all, the qualification criteria for the RTM were too restrictive. Second of all, the potential costs of the whole process were too high. Third of all, the outcome in terms of the movement of the management function to the RTM company was too uncertain. And fourth of all, the whole acquisition process was too susceptible to sabotage through legal disputes by difficult or obstinate landlords. So we've made over 50 concrete proposals intended to deal with these inadequacies. And if I may just run through them very quickly.
You may.
So first of all, we're proposing to relax the qualification criteria so that, for example, leasehold houses qualify for the RTM, buildings with more than 25% non-residential space qualify for the RTM, multi-building estates qualify for the RTM. We're proposing to reduce the number of notices that need to be exchanged between the parties, but nevertheless speed up the process of provision of information by the landlord to the leaseholders. And then we are proposing that all RTM companies disputes should be dealt with by the first-tier tribunal rather than by a mix of the first-tier tribunal and the county court, which is as it is at the moment. And then we're going to proposing to empower the tribunal to waive minor procedural errors in the documentation filled out by the leaseholders so that the whole process can continue, notwithstanding the errors. We're also seeking views on costs. There are two kinds of costs. There are non-litigation costs and there are litigation tribunal costs. And what we're proposing with regard to non-litigation costs is that the landlord should be entitled to recover some of those costs, but not all of them, from the RTM company. And the whole question is how much should the landlord be entitled to recover. Second of all, with regard to tribunal costs, we're proposing that each party should bear their own costs. So we're also seeking views on that. So that, in a nutshell, mm-hmm. are our proposals.
This isn't the only strand of the project that involves increasing the number of cases that would fall in the jurisdiction of the first-tier tribunal. So how do you think the tribunal would cope with all this additional workload?
Well, that's right. We're proposing that all enfranchisement, common hold and RTM costs should fall within the jurisdiction of the first-tier tribunal, rather than, as I say at the moment, a fragmented jurisdiction between the tribunal and the county court. There's no question but that the tribunal has the necessary experience and expertise to deal with these disputes. Government will have to consider the resource implications of our recommendations when they come to consider our final recommendations. But anyway, our proposals are intended to reduce the number of disputes that will arise, so it should not be so much of a problem.
Mm. Now, we're about halfway through the consultation period. How has the response been so far? And do you typically find that response levels rise as you get closer to deadline, or do they tend to come in quite swiftly?
Well, there's a steady trickle at the moment of responses, mainly from leaseholders, but not only from leaseholders. And as you say, typically there will be a surge just before the end of the consultation period, which, is, as you say, is 30th of April. So we also have a shorter survey intended just for leaseholders and for RTM company directors, which we would also like people to look at and complete if they would like to have their voice heard.
And I imagine details of all that are available on the Law Commission website.
On the Law Commission website, indeed.
So is this RTM aspect the final component of the overall project, or is there more to come?
Well, it's the last project that we've actually been asked to carry out by government, but there are still problems remaining in residential leasehold law. For example, unfair terms in leases, service charges, lease administration fees, the right of first refusal, and also problems with the legislation itself, which is inconsistent, opaque, complex, excessive costs imposed on the parties, insufficient regulation, and a lack of transparency generally.
Of course, with as well as those things remaining to be looked at, there is also separate work being carried out at governmental level on a number of leasehold issues by the Ministry for Housing, Communities and Local Government. Are you able to outline how your work ties in with what the government is doing in this area?
Yes, certainly. So what the government is looking at the moment are three areas: banning the sale of houses on a leasehold basis, banning ground rents of any monetary value, and also looking to regulate the managing agent sector. Now, our work is separate, but it does complement those areas of work. Needless to say, there are areas of overlap, and where there are, then we need to have joined up thinking. And so for that reason, we're working very closely with government and have regular discussions with officials.
I'm sure. And now, obviously, when it comes time to ultimately make your final recommendations in each of these three areas, they won't be binding on government. But are you optimistic that there does seem to be that particular appetite to grapple with leasehold reform in Westminster that may see your recommendations on this project being taken up more readily or more quickly than is sometimes the case?
Well, the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government has supported and funded the projects. And actually, we've had the biggest team on these three projects that we've ever had at the Law Commission. And clearly, the government recognises, because they funded these projects, that reform is long overdue in these areas. And we believe that they intend to bring forward change. So we're very hopeful that our recommendations will be accepted by government.
Well, thank you very much for explaining all that to us, Stephen, and best of luck with the rest of your work on the project.
Thank you very much, Jess.